Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to another edition of your favourite podcast, Insane in the Membrane.
Insane in the Membrane.
Happy Earth Day, everybody. It's Earth Day. Today is a specific day where we make sure we recycle. We make sure we don't use too much water. We make sure we do our bit. But only for one day, and then we go back to ruining the planet the rest of the week. Good to see you. Good to have you on board. Hope you're well. I'm recording this from my flat, this introduction. I know I'm not supposed to say, but I'm going to show you behind the curtain as I am currently ensconced under a blanket to stop the echo. This might be a bit poppy and you can probably hear what's going on in my mouth. I can hear it. It's really clear as a bell, actually. But yeah, that's what we're doing. We're doing that this week. Before we get into it, there's a wonderful review from Big George B. And a five-star review, the best podcast out there, consistently brilliant. Rich is a hero and of a man and a great host. Thank you, Big George B. I know people are a bit arrogant to read that out. Do you know what? It's been a tough old year. I'll take the love where I can get it, so I'll read out what I want. And if you want to leave us a five-star review, do so. We've also got Mental Health Awareness Week in May, and what I want you to do, I want people to just message in and let us know your favourite episodes. Let us know. It's not about coming on the show. It's just about letting us know what your favourite episodes were, things that you know that you heard that changed your life, that improved your mental health, you know, made you see things a little bit different. So if you drop us a line, richwilsoncomedian@gmail.com, and then I'll put a few things together and we'll do something special for Mental Health Awareness Week, which will be very nice. I think it's like the 10th to the 16th of May. So if you could do that, that would be spectacular. This week's guest, we did something a bit different this week. The band, they're called Sea Fever. We had a couple of members of the band on. Absolutely spectacular music coming your way. They got their single out, which is out right now, called Folding Lines. Previous members of Johnny Marr's band and New Order. And I tell you what, that was so great. It was so lovely to have them on. And because, you know, people that listen to this, you know I love my music, so I was really happy to talk to them. So exciting to have them on. So do you know what? Let's just get on with it, because I'm about to suffocate under this blanket. So coming up in a bit is Sea Fever.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
A
podcast from producerpaul.co.uk.
So how are you doing, boys? Are you excited for the music coming out?
Yeah, we're good. Yeah, we're good. Obviously, you know, this lockdown is dragging on a little bit, and it's playing on our minds because we don't really know what's going to happen with as far as the live sort of situation is concerned. You know, we're waiting. We've got some gigs, both of us booked in.
Brilliant.
And we're just really hoping it's just going to go ahead. You know, it's like. Yeah. I'm feeling confident, you know, I'm feeling good that the way things are going at the moment, it will happen. So,
yeah,
you know, fingers crossed and all that, but, we're good. Yeah. We're keeping busy. I think that's,
good.
Yeah.
I think, like you say, it will come, it's going to come back. It's going to take a while. It won't just snap back to how it used to be. But it will come, and I think we have to focus on the positive, you know, which is difficult to do when, you know, we started to open up a little bit and then it all got locked down again. But it's funny actually. I've just seen a post by the Damned, and they've got they're doing a it's been 45 years since Damned came out, and they're doing a gig where it's the original lineup. So that's been planned for ages, and they keep pushing the dates back. And they've just done one now. They've gone, look, there's no way that this can be a sit-down, socially distanced gig, you know? So we're going to put it back again till next year because it's just, you know, and that's the thing with gigs. I went to see the Stranglers in Croydon, and it was sitting, and we were all sat down. It was a different vibe. You've got to be up. You've got to be up and jumping around. And that's what that's what you thrive on, don't you? That the energy of the crowd just elevates.
That sort of togetherness, isn't it? When you're in the crowd and everyone's sort of, you know, everyone dancing or moving or even crowd surfing or what, you know, stuff.
Well, it's a 50-50 relationship, isn't it? Really, that what they give to you, you give back to them with your performance, really. And you know, that's what shows are all about. God, I miss all that. Now you're reminding me.
Yeah, sorry. Talk about mental health. It's just depressing the fuck out of you. So what else do you miss?
It'll come back.
It will come back. As most people, I always wanted to be in a band, and it never went anywhere. I was a drummer for a bit, but as I've said before on here, my dad said it sounded like someone trying to push a shed down the stairs. So it never kicked on. So I'm envious when I meet people that are in bands. And you've been in major bands before, and that must help in some way. But do you feel like you're starting again from scratch with this new band?
Much so. But that's part of the excitement of it, you know, just to sort of create something new and then sort of hope to play a few club shows and see what the reaction is. And I think it's really important as a musician to still be able to do that rather than deny it and think, you know, I've arrived now, I'm playing big gigs and I shouldn't be playing small clubs anymore. Well, for me, I just think those club gigs are really important because I think you're only as important as your music when you play those shows, you know, and it's real. And you're trying to grab people's attention. And I love them. And I have no problem with going into a van and traveling up and down the motorway still, you know, enjoying all the ride. You know, it's a ride, basically, you know.
Yeah.
So we finished this record. It's coming out this summer. And we're getting it all together now with the artwork and everything. It's a process. And I love it.
Yeah.
I mean, on to the next record, though. Yeah.
See, that's it. I've had that before. When you meet bands that you admire, and you get to have a chat with them, and you go, "Oh, I love that song." It's like track 7 on this album, and they go, "Oh yeah, I vaguely remember that." Because once you've done it, you've toured it around, you're like, "Right, on to the next bit." You know.
Yeah. And that I suppose must, you spent so much time in the studio as well, and you've listened to probably each song about a million times, so you kind of do get to the point where you kind of you still love it, but you want to sort of move on to
the next record
because you usually have songs that are left over as well, and then either that goes into a different direction or a different sort of style or anything, and then you kind of, your head sort of moves onto that quite quickly, I think.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. Yeah, you've, like you say, you've played those other songs to death, and now you're excited for the new, and that, yeah, and that, that new energy that you pump through, and they go, oh, can you just, we want you, we just want you to play the single forever. And that,
I think,
might,
I think also as well, you kind of like, especially if it's your first album, you, you're sort of learning within each other how everyone does stuff and how you all sort of come together. And I think
we're going to fall out on the road, you know,
work out which one's the pain in the ass.
But all the best bands have friction. You know this. They, they all end up traveling in separate buses.
Yeah, it's good to have a little bit of that, you know, because it's.
I think you need a bit of friction, you know.
Brings the best out of you, doesn't it, sometimes?
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, you become the Lighthouse family, and no disrespect to them.
Are they still going?
Probably somewhere. No disrespect to the lads, but it's not. There's not a lot of friction in that, in there, it seems.
Well, you don't know.
You don't actually, maybe.
You don't know.
So when you're coming to the table, do you all bring songs to the table? You'll bring stuff? Or is it one person writes it and the rest... kind of, or do you all a collaboration?
Well, I think musically, I usually start off the demos. I have a really good sort of idea of where the song goes from start to finish, and then I present it to people, and then we all start working on it. But it's usually me presenting a piece of music to Ewan and Beth as well, who's in the group, and. It's for them to decide if it turns them on, really, and they want to sort of write vocals to it. I'm really fortunate to work with two vocalists who are really quick. So within 3 days, I usually know if what I've given them is decent, because they usually come back very quickly with something. So it's a good sign, you know. So we're quick.
Yeah, that's good. That's nice. You've got that. You've got that chemistry between you all. You know, like you say, you present them, and they'll either go, "Yeah, I'm feeling that," or they'll go, "Nah, not so much." But
let's put it that way: if I don't hear from them after 2 weeks, I've got a pretty good idea they're not into it. You know,
so. That's when they go, "Oh, sorry, I didn't get the files."
which one was that one? I don't think you sent that one.
You know that song I sent you?
And with your with regards to your overall sound, is there like, because I know when you start off, you know that when you start out in bands, you know, you want to, it's like with comedy, you kind of go, I want to be more like, I don't know, Bill Burr or Richard Pryor or whoever. And with bands, is it like you sort of start off with like, I'm a massive fan of Therapy or Oasis or something, and you follow that until you kind of find your own sort of noise? And is that, do you kind of let it just happen?
I don't think that kind of happened with us, really, because I think we sort of like, we were just finding a feat with everyone, and the vocal side, me and Beth didn't even know if our vocals would even sit together or work together. Right. And we kind of like, once we did a track, once it was finished, we sort of sat back and listened to it to hear what our sound was. I don't think, we didn't really sort of say we wanted to sound like this band or this band, but we didn't know if the vocals were going to sit together and we were going to sound good together. And I mean, luckily, it's worked out really, really well.
Yeah.
Both our vocals work well together. And that was kind of just doing the early songs. You know, once we demoed them, we got them together and then made them sound to a point where we kind of had to sit back and then listen to what we sound like.
We didn't
really know, did we, at first?
No, we didn't know.
It was kind of a bit of a mystery, which is exciting, you know. It's a different, perhaps a slightly different process, but it was luckily they, you know, it all came together really well, and we sort of, as the next song went on and we built up the songs and started to sort of develop a bit of a sound, then
yeah,
a bit of a mystery.
Do you get that when you know when you've nailed a song, do you get that, You just, when you go, that's the fucking one. That's the one.
You've got a pretty good idea, yes. Yeah. But then it can be proven wrong sometimes. You know, you just think, well, that song's got to be a single. And somebody goes, no, not feeling it. You know,
yeah, I think, right.
It's usually the one that's kind of like, you can't go to sleep. That's what I find. It's like a melody or something. And then I'd be like, oh, I can't get to sleep. But that'll be the one that's, I don't know, your earworm. But as Tom says, like, our ideas of singles are totally different to other people,
yeah.
You know, labels or people, other people that work in the industry. So
yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? When you slave over what you've done, and then it takes someone. This isn't the case all the time, I imagine, but most people I've met that have to then take your music and then put it out into the world, and they have to decide which is the first record the first track they're going to go with, and that must be quite, sometimes giving it to someone that you know doesn't fucking know what they're talking about, that must be quite hard. But they can see it on a sales level, they go, no, I know. But on a soul sort of feeling level, you're like, well, you don't get it, man, you don't fucking get it. Yeah. Your shoes are shit, for one, so you don't understand decent footwear. And now you're telling me that this is the better song to lead with. Go fuck you. It must be hard to bite your lip sometimes.
I suppose that's like when it gets to the sort of business end of stuff, doesn't it? That's when it can, I mean, it can be difficult, especially when he's like, I mean, Tom will know, when you sort of spend a lot of time on, some songs are easy and then some songs take a lot longer and take a lot more work. So
they are a labour of love, and yeah. Like a puzzle.
Yeah.
It's like putting a puzzle together, and it can take a long time sometimes. You wrestle with a song, you know, so, but it can be quite a lengthy process, basically. But to going back to what you were saying about the choosing singles, it's interesting because we're currently working with a label in London, and they presented us a list of songs that they thought should be sort of single choices, and we disagreed on one, didn't we? We were just like, no, we've got a good feeling that this should be a single number two. And I think sometimes it's important as an artist as well to sort of retain that control of what you think. Stick to your gut feeling, like you were saying. This is the one. So
yeah. Oh, definitely. I think that, and when you're putting the album together, you can, I imagine you can feel that they kind of, you know, the order they go in, and the overall feeling of the album, which is something that people can't really understand. They kind of, oh, it's just a list of songs. It's got, this needs to go after that one. Yeah.
I mean, the label that we're working with have been, they're really good like that, because we pretty much did this sort of, the album listing ourselves, and if we do want to change something, if we sort of say, no, we really think this is the single to go next, or second, third, they're great like that. They've been sort of they're open to ideas, which is some labels aren't. Labels are like, this is going to happen, and whereas, you know, I think that's happening a lot more. I think there's a lot more sort of smaller labels and independent labels that are more for the artist now, and more, I think those, I mean, I imagine it's not all major labels and stuff, because the major labels are really good as well. So it's kind of like, I think that kind of sort of pushy directness is sort of a little less than it might have been in the sort of 90s and 2000s, but we're lucky enough to sort of, they've been pretty good, you know. Well, really
so far so good.
So far so good. Yes. Yeah.
Well, when they got in touch, and we had a bit of back and forth, a bit of chat, they seemed like really into it, and were really, you know, as they should be, but there was a bit extra, which seemed nice.
Yeah, they've been really enthusiastic and been really good to work with. So I mean, that's what you want. You want
You want someone who's behind you, really, and who believes in your music, you know.
Yeah, and if there's a lot of bands on labels and stuff, it's some bands will get more of a priority and stuff like that, so that can always happen as well. But there's a real enthusiasm there, and then, you know, they really like the album, so we'll see what happens. Yeah.
It's cool, man. The stuff I got sent is absolutely brilliant, because there's a lot of times you get sent stuff, or because we do a radio show as well, and so a lot of people get in touch with that, and they go, do you want to listen to that? It's only on a little indie label, but it's brilliant. We have a really good time. Islington Radio, it's really fucking cool.
But Islington Radio, yeah.
Tom Bright, brilliant. And they send it, I get sent stuff sometimes, and I'm now having to be a bit diplomatic and going, this
not sounds for me.
This sounds like two churches fucking. I don't know where to put it. I mean, you're like, I don't know. and I feel really bad, because I just said to you guys, it's like you've worked really hard on what you're doing, and you've put everything into it, and then to have someone on the outside go, that's not really. But then it's up to the individual. Yeah. They don't dig it.
There's a lot of music, isn't there? There's so much music now. Yeah. And
you can't please everyone with your music, can you?
No. You're not going to please everyone. You're always going to, you know. Sometimes, I mean, I think criticism's good as long as it's sort of healthy criticism. If it's just sort of like, you know, you sound like them or...
If
it's not been thought about, then it's kind of like, well, you know, maybe you've not listened to it properly enough. I don't know. But
yeah, when it's late.
Healthy criticism and you can learn a bit from it, it's fine, you know.
Yeah.
Can't please them all.
And how did it feel when you were? Because we won't go too far into it. But how did it feel when you were gigging with the band? You know, the bands that were already established. And was that? Did it feel like in at the deep end? You're like, fuck. You've got to sort of hit the ground running, or. Do you know what I mean? Or you were just like, you know, was it quite, must have been quite daunting to begin with.
I'll start this. When I joined New Order, it was that feeling. It was daunting, but it was also exciting. And then we didn't know what was going to happen. It was, you know, we booked a couple of shows, one in Belgium, one in Paris, and in true New Order fashion, it was like, well, let's see what happens, you know? And those shows went down really well. But it took me a long time to realize I was in New Order. That was a really strange thing, because I'd been working with Bernard Sumner in Bad Lieutenant prior.
Yeah, right, okay.
And it was until we flew to South America and played a massive festival in front of 20,000 people that I just thought, shit, I'm in this massive band. Yeah. This is huge. I've never done this before, you know. So it was like, it was completely new to me. And it took a long time to sink in. And it's everything you dream of as a young guy. So, you know, playing your instruments and growing up, you have those sort of aspiration of being on stage in front of thousands. And it was that. It was amazing.
Yeah,
and to work with those people, and they're very inspirational people and great musicians with great histories and stories, and it's brilliant, you know.
Yeah, I think
I don't take anything for granted. I don't, because I'm just super lucky to be in that position.
Yeah, and I think it's nice that they were they felt that they could share their, you know. Share their stories with you, and because then it helps you going forward. You get an understanding of the industry, and you hear so many stories about people being shitty and not, you know, they don't want to talk to anyone, and they're all, you know, they think they're bigger than they are and whatever. But it sounds like you've had a nice relationship with everyone you've worked with going thus far, which can only sort of spur you on.
Yeah, I mean, my sort of journey with Johnny was sort of more of a gradual one, because I played with him. I think we did like a couple of gigs before he went off to Modest Mouse.
Oh yeah.
And, I did the Manchester versus Cancer gig, and
he produced your old band as well, didn't he?
And he produced Haven, yeah. So
yeah, when right, cool.
First moved up to from Cornwall to Manchester through Joe Moss. We kind of he produced both albums. and we sort of knew each other through then, and then joined his band, and it was sort of more gradual. But you know, at that age, I mean, literally, when I moved up from Cornwall, it was like I didn't really know anything about Manchester music, or
right.
Yeah, you know, I was listening to some very, very shady stuff.
What were you listening to? Come on, you can't leave it there. Well, let's have a go. What is it? Come on, come on. Let's see behind the curtain.
Well, it's like in Cornwall, there's a lot of metal stuff. So right. I was into skateboarding, I was into surfing, I was into like, you know, I was in a singing in a death metal band at one point, you know.
Really?
Like, yeah, me and Nat, who's the guitarist, I think it was Tom, our first drummer, and then Jack took over from some Tom, and Tom was like, I think we might have played in like a church or something, some really weird venue. And it's like, I was so obsessed with like headbanging, I would end up like, I couldn't really play my bass well at the time. So I just like, Nat would look over and he'd be like, I wouldn't even be playing the bass. I'd just be concentrating more on my headbanging.
Looking good rather than sounding good.
It was all like death metal. And then it moved to sort of punk and then indie. And we literally went through, it was like Rage Against the Machine. And then we went to Nirvana. It was all kind of moved sort of gradually less sort of heavy, you know, but we learned a lot of, you know, some really super fast music. But the one good thing I can say about that is that it technically, it's so hard, some of it, that when you move on to like indie stuff, it's like, it's to play, it's kind of to work out, it's like, oh, this is so much easier than learning, you know, all this sort of bad sort of death metal stuff.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because there was a phase in the late 80s, early 90s, and we went to see Dirty Rotten Imbeciles and bands like that, and we were into Bolt Thrower and Napalm Death, and
that was it. That was what we were into.
So, but when you listen to that stuff, like, to the untrained ear, people are going, that's just noise. But when you listen to it, you go, you have to be fucking on it to play that fast and to kick together as a band as well. Yeah, that speed, it's because you don't control that. That's just hurtling along. Fuck knows what speed.
It's the extreme, isn't it, of sort of band music, you know? And I mean, like, it was a big thing in Cornwall, you know. Heavy music was quite a thing down there, you know. It's moving up to Manchester, it was just so different, completely different.
I never got it. It wasn't for you, Tom.
Yeah.
I can't listen to it now.
You can't. You're not into Slayer, are you, Tom?
I remember working as a sound engineer in Manchester when in my 20s, and we were booked in this club, and it was like one of these heavy metal sort of nights and stuff. And I remember feeling almost sick with the music, because it was 3 hours of that with guys with their heads spinning. I was like going, what the fuck is this? Get me out of here. This was like a nightmare that would sort of end.
That's how I felt. I went to see Slayer. My younger brother loves Slayer. And my mate I was living with at the time, massive Slayer fans. And I drove them there. And I'm like, all right. I remember just standing there. And it was like being stood under a giant tap, and every 3 minutes they turn the hot tap on. I'll just be just this deluge of fucking noise. Then they turn it off and go, all right, thanks very much. Yeah. And then the next one, and I'm like, fuck, I can't cope. And I had to go outside. Because it's just too much.
I did too. It was just like, I couldn't take it. It's too much.
I like a melody. I like it. As technically brilliant as they are, I like the more melodic sound of Manchester. It's just a different vibe, isn't it? You know?
Yes.
Yeah, they're totally opposite. Yeah, you must have thought you were in walking around in treacle when you got to Manchester after all that.
Yeah, I mean, it was because it wasn't that long until we were sort of, you know, we met Johnny after that. And then it was like your whole sort of music world had been sort of turned upside down, really, in a really good way, you know. Because we just learned so much in a very short space of time, and about everything, you know, not just about you know, writing and about just stuff about being in a band and all sorts of stuff. And it was, I mean, it's brilliant, you know, and I still today, you know, when we're recording or we're gigging, and you still learn loads from Johnny, you know, it's all really good stuff.
They may really, with New Order, it's the same, you know, when we recorded music complete together, I was just like a hawk in the studio looking at everything they were doing, you know.
Yeah.
You just want to learn from them, you know, because they're the masters of production, really, and songwriting. So
yeah,
it's important. Absolutely. And they're willing to sort of pass their knowledge on to you as well, which is great. You know, that's the best thing about working with them, really. So
yeah. Especially someone like they always seem to appear on. That's the sign that they're into what they're doing, rather than just wanting to be rock stars. They're actually like they pop up on each other's sort of records, and like Johnny Marr, he was in the and then it was electronic, and then it was you know, the Cribs, and he was
Cribs.
And you're like, fuck this guy, he just wants to do it, and he's happy to just rock up anywhere. And that's what I've always admired about those people. And I imagine it's the same with you guys. You kind of just, you just want to do it. So you kind of, you know, you just want to do it. You don't know where you do it.
Throwing yourself in the deep end as well, you know, there'd be different, this collection of stuff Johnny's done, it's so varied, you know, to like Modest Mouse. No one would have thought he'd been in Modest Mouse. And that album's just amazing. Really, really good album. And it's like, I think it's always testing themselves and always sort of, as I say, just throwing yourself in the deep end. And that's when all you sort of find out about yourself, really, don't you? Find out, and it brings out the best in you, really. You've got to put yourself in sort of situations that sometimes are not comfortable to sort of bring the sort of good stuff out, I suppose.
Yeah. I suppose that's where you're at now. You're kind of starting afresh. New band, you don't know how it's going to be received, but you're just in it and you love it and you just want people to have it.
Exactly where we're at. Yeah.
And for me, it's different in that personally, because I'm sort of singing, so it's like it's kind of a whole big sort of learning curve, you know. But
Ewan doesn't even want to play the bass anymore.
No, I just like
just wants the headbang.
You can do it all.
I'm just like open chested jumpsuit.
Not interested.
Bring it on.
Just stand there with your Devo hat on.
Swinging the mic around and all sorts. Like, great. Don't have to play anything.
He hasn't sung a fucking crotchet yet. What's he doing? Get off the fucking speakers, man. What about you, Tom? Your background in, what was your first band like? Was it like, it wasn't thrash metal?
No, it wasn't. Well, I grew up in France and just outside Paris, and just small town and nothing much happening. And I came across the Smiths, funnily enough, sort of growing up, and that really changed everything for me. You know, I didn't know anything about them, because in those days there were no internet. So I was just purely in love with the music. And I just thought, so I found out a bit about them, that they were from Manchester. And then I decided to move to Manchester and try and sort of get a break. But I've heard that story from loads of people in Manchester, you know, from abroad. And so I moved to Manchester when I was 20 to sort of, trying to establish myself as a musician, thinking it would be really easy, and it wasn't. It took years, really struggling on the local scene, and but it was great. It was a journey, and it paid off, you know. So loads of bands, loads of venues, meeting loads of people in Manchester. That's one of the great things about Manchester. It's quite a small city, so it's easy enough to meet a lot of like-minded people musically and interested in art and everything. So that was my journey, really. And so no, I'm sorry, I wasn't into thrash metal. I moved
French
to Manchester
because
I love Manchester music. And
well, that was like when I was growing up, Manchester was, I was sort of 18. I'd just come of age when we had the baggy stuff, the Mondays and the Roses and Spiral Carpets and all that. And then that just went on and on. And so Manchester became our everything from, you know, and it was like, it became this like our mecca. Like, oh, we were like always making plans to go, but we never went. And then we
Go to the Hacienda or anything?
Never
like
went.
That?
I never went. No. Gutted. I never went. I never got to Manchester until I started doing comedy, which was in 2004, unfortunately. But I know what you mean about that. Manchester being a small city, it's that it's still it's still not been gentrified too much. There's still that element of rawness and unpredictability. There's still arty corners and things like that, which is London used to be that way, but it's had its edges rubbed off.
Do you think it's London's losing its edge a little bit?
I think we're now moving out a bit. The beautiful little venues that you could play, the dirty, dingy places, are all starting to go, which is a shame. Borderline, they're all starting. We lost the Astoria, which was a great place.
It's
a shame.
It's been the same up here, hasn't it? We've had a few great venues have shut down.
Yeah, when it all starts getting back to normal, I suppose we'll see if, you know, how many these venues are around, which fingers crossed are going to be. So, yeah, difficult, sad times. Because those venues and the people that work there and the bands that played there or the comedians have been there, they're like, and people have had so many good memories and so many good times there, and, you know, it'll be sad that when this all sort of, when it does get back to normal, they can't sort of, you know, go back there and relive those moments, you know.
Yeah, like you say, growing up, when you're a teenager and you start going out to see bands for the first time and you feel like an adult and you're amongst all these weird and wonderful people that you'd never come across ordinarily, it's like you've all sort of found each other. And it's that smell of old, the dirty leather and the patchouli oil and the shit lager and it's piss everywhere. you fuck up your brand new DMs, but you had a fucking great time. I don't want that to be lost. You know, I want the younger people to go through those experiences, being free. You know, you've lost your jacket, you're freezing cold on the night bus going home because you're sweaty and
exactly. Yeah, I mean,
you know,
it's but my nephew's like 18, and you know, I feel just like for that age, that sort of age bracket, I feel really sorry for him, because, you know, around that time, I mean, I know it only seems like a year, but it's like it's a really important year,
time of life
where you sort of you're going out and you're meeting people and you're socializing, and it's like they can't do it, and you know, the students and stuff is just I feel really sorry for them, the youngsters, everyone as a whole, but you know, I think they sometimes get a bit overlooked.
I know what you mean. And that, and like you said earlier, is that those small venues and gig, that intimacy with the bands, it's so important for both of you, for everyone involved, you know, like you're building up your audience, and that, and those stories are the one you don't really talk about. The times you saw, I don't know, oh yeah, I saw Oasis at Wembley. You don't really talk about that. You go, I saw them in this shit pub in New Cross. There was only 10 of us stood there, but they were still acting like they were in front of 50,000 people. Yeah. Those are the stories that you tell, you know, and that's what you want to be a part of as a band.
And it's the random nights, we used to call it, you know, the nights where, like, when I remember when we first moved up, and we all moved up in a van, basically everything in a van, turned up at Joe's house, knocked on the door, and he didn't even know. He asked us to see if we wanted, you know, put the sort of...
He must have been happy when he saw it.
I know, yeah. We all took... Well, he said, you know, if you want to give it a go, you're going to have to make that move at some point, you know. But it's like... Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, I don't know what we were on there, but
that's the bit. I think this all plays into the mental health conversation. Yeah. Is that though, taking those experiences away, it doesn't leave you, you know, sitting around having a coffee with all your mates isn't the same. Isn't the same as trying to. I went to see The Exploited, and it's the one and only time I did a stage dive. my mate and I, we ended up on the stage, and I turned around and my mate had tripped over the wires and he disappeared through the back curtain. So I'm now I'm stood there on my own with the, and I'm like, fuck. And the whole mosh pit is like, yeah, they've got their hands up. I go, do it, do it, do it. And I jumped and I missed the mosh pit and I hit the floor behind the mosh pit, like proper, like really hurt myself. And then sort of crawled off into the darkened corner. But I wouldn't change that for the world. I wouldn't. And no. These are experiences that I now, that give me comfort and taught me so much.
Yeah.
And that's why I think bands, music, I think we need to get back to that, those small venues with the live experience. Big major labels seem to be, they're just focusing on the money and the let's sell out Wembley Arena for 50,000 nights. And I'm sure it'll come back. I'm sure after this, there'll be darkened corners where we can still do that.
Yeah, I hope. I think there's going to be so many people that want to go out and want to go to gigs, you know, because not being able to do that. I mean, I think it's going to be amazing when everyone can just sort of, you know, just get to a gig and buy tickets. And
I think it'll be a hell of a party. Let's put it that way.
It's going to be. I'm going to really
bring
embarrass
it on,
myself.
Ready.
Fucking right. I'm 49. I'm going to stage dive.
Come to our gig.
I'm fucking going to. Don't worry about that. I loved when they sent me. I'm like, I'm having that. I am definitely having that. And I loved it. What was it like in France? Did you have the same sort of venues?
No,
I mean, I know about the Bataclan in Paris, but I don't really know.
No, I didn't really. I went to a nightclub called The Locomotive, which I think I had a joint night with the Hacienda in Paris. It was like a sister club.
Right.
So I used to go there to sort of listen to on the indie nights. That was my interest. But really, no, I didn't do that much in France, and I wasn't really into the music either. I think that's what sort of pushed me to leave France and come to Manchester, really. It was a strange time growing up, really, because I loved British music and you couldn't hear enough of it on the radio, and everybody was, all my mates were into Dire Straits and things like that. And it wasn't for me, really, I think it was the right thing to do. And when I think about it now, it changed my life forever. You know, it's like those decisions you make when you're a young man or a young person growing up, and they change your life forever.
You sort of remember that sort of that point, don't you, where you've got to make a decision.
But at the time, I just thought, I'll just go to England and it might not work out. And, I ended up staying because I loved it. And I met so many great people in Manchester that I thought, where have you been all my life? You know, I was looking for people like you to hang out with. And it was a really pivotal moment. Really.
But it's good that you had that you had the wherewithal to go, fuck it, I'm going. Because so many people don't, you know. So many people I know that I grew up with, they still live in the same street where they grew up. They still live in the same town. They haven't really branched out. And it's a shame, you know. And it's good that you had that drive, man.
When somebody said to me recently, it was really brave to do it because I left everything that I'd known behind me. You know, my friends and family, and I just effectively arrived in Manchester. I didn't know anyone. I didn't know anybody. But I just saw it as exciting times. And I also had this sort of strong belief that I was going to do it and make it as a musician. I mean,
You've got to have dreams.
I want to be a musician. I think Manchester's the place for me to do it. And it's strange, but somehow I was right.
No, absolutely. But that's good though. It is. Right. I mean, I've recently a few friends of mine are moving to Manchester, and my lads are older now. They live in Bristol, and I was kind of like, yeah, I can go where I want. Actually, I could, and I've actually thought about Manchester because I do love it up there. It's a different vibe, and it's funny about that drive, about that knowing that you're going to make it. It's like with comedy. It was the first thing that I discovered where I'm like, I can fucking do this. I know I can fucking do this. And even when I died on my ass 1,000 times, I'm like, nah, I can still feel it's there. That drive to just keep doing it, which must be the same with you guys, is that...
But I'm not saying it in an arrogant way. I just
No, of course not.
You have that instinct in you that you think you can do it, you know. And don't get me wrong, it was a really hard road to get to it, you know, with a lot of sort of downfalls, and it wasn't easy. It took a long time, and I think you need an element of luck, and you create your own luck. You know, that's the thing. It was that belief that I could do it. I think Ewan had that as well, moving from Cornwall to Manchester.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
some terrible times. You know, I remember like my 21st birthday, and if we moved up, and we just had no money at all. And I think we were like out in Fifth Avenue, and we didn't have enough to have. We had like one beer each, you know.
We've been there.
Yeah. And then it's like, right, well, let's go then. And I was thinking, man, what am I doing? You know, what. How long are we going to be able to do this for? And thinking that, I'm just going to have to go back to Cornwall, you know, and having those moments, and then having a good moment that will sort of make you think, oh, I don't know, maybe I can stick.
Yeah.
We had some, oh, man.
Really? We've all had them.
Yeah, had some really tough moments, but then had that just... absolutely amazing moments that just sort of made you think, well, this was really worth it, you know, this was the right decision. But
yeah, I get that. I know exactly what you mean. I've been just laying there on a mattress in the middle of this fucking shit flat, and you're like, what am I fucking doing? This is, and then all it takes is someone to, you get a text or something, and they go, do you want to come and do this gig? And you go, that's what I'm doing. That's why this doesn't matter, because I'm doing that.
Exactly.
I feel it, man. I feel it. So I'm really excited about your stuff coming out, and I can't wait until I can see you live, because it's from what I've heard, it's going to be fucking epic. And I'm not just saying that because you're sat here. It's going to be fucking great. And
it'll be epic if you come to the gig and stage dive.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to be. I'll be your Bez or your Cressa. Middle-aged man.
We'll have to just bring your mate on as well, so we can just trip over and go out the back as well.
Relive that moment.
Yeah, exactly. Same moment.
A little bit of slapstick just to take the edge off.
Yeah.
So when is the album out? When do we start hear your stuff?
So the album is out on the 13th of August, and that's all digital and physical. So
yeah. Oh really? Is there physical copies as well?
Yes, it's all vinyl, CD, the whole thing, and then
Yes. That's the thing as well. I talk about this. I've mentioned this on the radio show. It's all very well having Spotify and things like that. That's fine, but it's, if you want your bands that you love to keep making music, is buy the music, buy the stuff, go onto Bandcamp, and because it's expensive, isn't it? Like vinyl I can't imagine how much that costs to stick out, and because that's where I go to. I love the vinyl. So,
well, I think it's the thing of having a physical piece of art that you can hold and read everything about it and put it onto your record player and go through it. And I don't know. Yeah.
I think also that thing of the album, sometimes the last track of the album could be your favorite track of the album.
Yeah.
Nowadays it's up because because it's all streaming. I don't think people don't get to that point in the album. You know, some of the songs that are kind of probably lost that you probably, like musicians have spent hours and hours or working on. And I think when you've got a physical copy, you generally listen, you listen to it from start to finish. It's all kind of sort of singles now and EPs.
People pick out, they hear the one song and they'll download that one. And
I suppose that's playlists as well. That's how the playlist thing works.
Yeah. And they might not take any notice of the rest of the album, but I seem to remember, I had this conversation the other day with someone, and I was always saying track 7 on an album is usually a surprise. You kind of go, oh, fucking yeah. For some reason, it's either track 3 or track 7 we were talking about. And people don't normally get that far. It's normally, and they're like, no, man. Yeah. And the fact that you've put the whole album together as a piece of work.
As it blends in.
Yeah, you don't, like we said earlier, when you're putting the track listings together, you can feel where each song goes. You can feel when one doesn't fit quite where it is. Like you said, Ewan, about songs being sort of left to one side, they don't go on the album because they don't feel like they fit.
Yeah.
And people don't really understand that, do they? They just go, oh, just a list of songs. And that's why it must be quite frustrating as a musician when you've painstakingly put that album together. What track one finishes perfectly with track 10 or 12 or whatever it is. And then people just don't take any notice. And that must be infuriating.
It can be. Yeah.
Well, I'm telling you now, I will be buying a proper copy because I just like looking at the spines of all my records just going, fucking yeah, I've got that. It just, I don't know, maybe it's because it was records when I was growing up, so maybe it's that.
Yeah, when I go and see my folks and see, but my dad's just got so many albums. I mean, he's still listening to cassettes. He's got cassettes. Cool. And it's like, you know, you think they've all worn out and stuff, but he's heavily into vinyl. And, you know, it's good because you can sort of, I can sit in there and discover different stuff and then take it and go. Where's my Nina Simone album or something?
I haven't seen it, Dad. I haven't seen
it. Don't think you bought one, Dad.
I don't know what it was like for you, Ewan, when you started playing your instrument, but I'm just talking of vinyls now. I remember sort of when I started playing the bass, it wasn't like today where you sort of, I learned sort of listening to records, so I tried to replicate what I was hearing. But in those days, all I had was my record player, and it was a matter of lifting the needle and going backwards and forwards like to try and get a button and learn the instrument, you know. And then when I say this to people now, they just think, wow, you're from a different planet, man. But that's how we used to do it, you know, sort of needle going backwards and forwards, trying to pick apart on the record.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
My dad used to put, because I just had a little, because so I could do stuff and learn stuff in my room, he used to put all the stuff on cassettes for me. So then I could listen to the vinyl downstairs.
All right, so you could press play and
rewind. So I could super modern.
This guy with his futuristic fucking...
Awkward. That's what I used to put, like Jimi Hendrix albums and all sorts of, you know, all sorts of J.J. Cale and all sorts, and then I'd just sit and learn it.
But this has been, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on and talk to me about this. I could talk about music with you lot all day.
It's been great.
See, it's not shit. It's not all shit.
No, it's good.
You're gonna have to do interviews now later going forward for the album, and it's going to be bollocks. And I'm glad I was in on the ground floor.
You got the first, definitely.
Fucking right, mate. Final question, and I know this is, you might get asked this a lot, or I don't know, but favourite album of all time? Cool. It's a tricky one, isn't it? Because it changes all the time. Favorite album right now in this moment, where you're at?
I'd have to say "Forever Changes" by Love.
Nice, nice.
Defining album, changing moment for me is probably "Me Is Murder" by The Smiths. So that was an important album.
Yeah,
there you go.
Fucking brilliant, lads. Thank you so much. I'll be at the gigs and I'll be cheering you on and telling all the people about you. Look after yourselves.
Thank you, man.
Seeing out there. Take care.
Brilliant. Thanks very much.
Insane in the membrane.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices.
Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedy-ad-free. That's amazon.com/comedy-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Made by darkhorsedigital.co.uk. Shooting, live streaming, and podcast production.